But first, to the end of the rules-based international order, which sounds like a script line from Monty Python, but which is actually the headline from a speech overnight from the German Chancellor Friedrich Merz. It was the opening address of the Munich Security Conference, where this time last year, the US Vice President J.D. Vance harangued European allies for imperiling Western civilization and praised far-right populist parties. The German Chancellor said a deep divide had opened up between Europe and the United States.
Über dieser Konferenz steht ein düsteres Motto.
You've chosen a grim motto for this conference, under destruction. And it probably means that the international order based on rights and rules is currently being destroyed. But I'm afraid we have to put it in even harsher terms. This order, as flawed as it has been even in its heyday, no longer exists.
Listening in the audience was the US Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, who spoke of a new era of geopolitics before leaving Washington for Munich.
I think they want honesty. They want to know where we're going, where we'd like to go with them. And I think it's at a defining moment. The world is changing very fast right in front of us. The old world is gone, and we live in a new era in geopolitics. And it's going to require all of us to sort of re-examine what our role is going to be. We've had many of these conversations in private with many of our allies, and they are our allies. And we need to continue to have those conversations.
And later today, Marco Rubio will deliver his own speech to the Munich Security Conference. Just before coming on air, I spoke to Andrew Moravchik, who runs the European Union program at Princeton University. He's in Munich. And I asked him what had been the reaction to the German Chancellor's speech.
You know, one reads in the press that it was a in-your-face speech saying essentially to the Americans that if they didn't cooperate in a more traditional way, that it in the end it would come back to bite them. But I don't think that's the way it was perceived when people were in the hall or watching it or talking about it afterward. Much more the perception was it was a pretty straightforward matter-of-fact speech. And insofar as he was saying, you know, it's not always to your advantage to fight with allies rather than find ways to cooperate with them. He was saying something that's pretty consensually believed here and also in the United States. So I didn't think it was as controversial as some people made it out to be, but I thought it was firm. The tone was sober and straightforward.
But it is still very jolting, isn't it, to hear the leader of one of America's closest allies declare the end of the rules-based international order?
Yes, that's true. Although, you know, I think the mood, the positive side of that mood here, expressed by some people from the administration and some people quietly and the European side as well, is that there's been a substantial amount of consensus. The Americans have a less radical position on issues like Ukraine or even trade than they did a year ago. And that now you can get down to brass tacks and actually try to work out issue by issue things that people can do. To put it another way, the Europeans have shown that they're willing to spend the money on defense, which was Trump's largest or most salient concern. And the Americans are now talking, at least to judge from the people who are here at this meeting, from the administration, as if you can consider them to be members of the NATO alliance in good standing. The nuclear guarantee stands, Article 5 stands, and it's now a question of working out what kind of details everybody should follow for defending Europe and for resolving the Ukraine crisis. It was striking in the answer to a question that Merz was very firm that he thought he was being consulted throughout on the Ukraine stuff.
What you seem to be saying is don't judge what's happening by the headlines and the most quotable Correct. Clips in the headlines. What you're saying is judge it by what's happening sort of behind the scenes. That there's some negotiations here that are kind of more sensible, less headline worthy in a way, but perhaps more meaningful.
let me put it this way, that the people who are there at this meeting, both from the Trump side and from the German side, are very firm that that's what they want you to take away from this. And I don't have any reason to disbelieve them. It's a little different than saying that's actually going to be the way it works out. Those negotiations are negotiations. They can, you know, break down. But I think that the sense now is that people are much more pragmatic. The person who gave the most positive speech was Mark Rutte, the head of NATO. His speech was extraordinary. He said, you know, NATO was in its heyday. It was as good as it's been ever since the end of the Cold War. People are on the same page. The Europeans are paying up. He likes working with Trump because he's direct. How much of that should we believe? I don't know. But I haven't heard even Mark Rutte, who was a NATO booster, after all, professionally, I haven't heard him talk like that about this before. So I do think that there were signs of optimism amidst what is a sober recognition that things are going to be a little tougher, or not just business as usual going forward.
Mark Rutte, the Secretary General of NATO, former Dutch Prime Minister, is a cheerleader, of course, yes, for the Transatlantic Alliance, and somebody who generally says things that please Donald Trump. I mean, he's got something of a reputation for that. Marco Rubio, the US Secretary of State, he will be addressing the conference later on today, our time in Australia, on Saturday. Ahead of it, he gave a little sort of press conference on the tarmac in Washington before heading to Germany. He said we live in a new global era. I mean, I wonder what he means by that and what we expect him to say later on.
You know, the simple interpretation would be our administration has to be claiming to be doing things differently because our rhetoric is calling for change, and so we're doing things differently. A more sober view would be like the one I laid out, that it's going to be much more negotiating item by item. But you do have to remember that the people in the MAGA camp, the foreign policy people in the Trump administration, many of them have a rather entrenched negative view about many aspects of Europe, the social welfare systems, the EU as an institution. In fact, I believe the political economic disputes between Europe and the US are probably more intractable than the security ones. And so that can be something that you say to people in your camp, saying, okay, now we've gotten them to really do things in a new way. Now we can, you know, have pragmatic discussions. But it's hard to know what he means by it.
Yeah. Greenland has come up again. Donald Trump saying overnight in America still wants Greenland. Negotiations on that presumably are going to be taking place.
Everybody went out of their way. So Mark Rutte, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, Bridge Colby, who is the high-ranking Department of War, as it's called now, official in the U.S., and they all insist that taking over Greenland is off the table. Now what they want is to work out arrangements so that we can collectively defend it. And there might be tough negotiations about, you know, what you station where, but that's the range of the disagreement going forward. So there will certainly be discussions and negotiations. But if you are to believe what people say there, it's not going to be about whether or not the United States takes over Greenland.
Listening to you, I'm reminded of that famous British tea towel. Keep calm and carry on. You sound less sort of worried about the kind of breach in the transatlantic alliance than others.
I'm worried, but not so much about this. I think that there are deep reasons why it's not in the U.S. interest. It's perhaps not even really feasible to break with NATO allies on the security side. I'm much more worried about things that don't get talked about so much at the Munich Security Conference, mostly the role of tech, trade disputes, investment disputes, regulatory disputes between the United States and Europe. It's my estimation that Trump is really much more concerned about cashing out a lot of these disputes to his, what he perceives as his country's economic advantage, than he is about Greenland or Ukraine or anything else. And those disputes could be very, very tough.
Andrew Muravchik, thank you so much for joining us on a busy Friday night in Munich.
Okay. Thank you very much. It was a real pleasure.
That was Andrew Moravchik, a professor of politics and international affairs at Princeton University, talking to us from Munich outside the city's floodlit opera house, in fact. Let's get more analysis from Christine Berzina, an expert in the transatlantic relationship at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. Christine, thanks for joining us on ABC Radio National.
It's great to be here.
In Davos last month, we heard the Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney talk of a rupture, not a transition. We've heard the German Chancellor there talk of the end of the rules-based international order. You're an expert in the transatlantic relationship. I'm struck by the fact that it's Valentine's Day in Australia because this now feels like we are watching a divorce.
We've seen many questions over the past year since the last Munich Security Conference on the nature of the transatlantic relationship. A year ago, American Vice President J.D. Vance came to Munich and insulted the core values of the Europeans. And this created shockwaves that lasted through the year and into the Greenland crisis of January. What the Europeans have brought back as an answer is not so much, I'd say, a divorce, because there are so many reasons for Europeans and Americans to cooperate and to be dependent on each other in security, codependent economically, but it's about a recalibration. So the shockwaves are a preparation and a way to justify, including to domestic audiences, the need for the balance in relationship between Europe and the United States to look very different. So President Macron today in Munich gave a speech that was all about the confidence of Europe, the potential of Europe. He landed on the word audacity for what Europeans would need. And that kind of taking back of the initiative, of taking back of maturity, and he said to get to a respectful relationship with the United States is what a lot of the activity of this past year has been. And it is coming more to the fore in the past week at the NATO defense ministerial meeting just a few days ago, in an EU leaders informal retreat. And it's now up to actually doing it on the European side.
Yeah, you were talking about the respectful relationship there. I mean, this time last year, obviously, we were talking about what was really a bombshell speech from J.D. Vance. I mean, we spoke to somebody at the Munich conference last year who said there was silence in the room when he was speaking. People just couldn't believe what they were hearing. You've had America deliver its national security strategy, talking about the civilizational erasure in Europe right now. I was struck by what Andrew Moravchik said there. You know, people are making these speeches, people are making these statements, but actually it's more important what's happening on the sidelines, and things there aren't quite so bad. Is that your sense too?
There are various elements of this relationship. When you mention the J.D. Vance's speech last year on the national security strategy, that is one line of argument from the Trump administration, very much aligned with the civilizational view of the transatlantic relationship. Now, the messengers at this Munich Security Conference represent a different branch of this administration. It's far more pragmatic. On the defense side, Undersecretary for Policy at the Pentagon, Elbridge Colby, is on the ground in Munich, and he laid out in Munich a very pragmatic approach about why there needs to be more European defense maturity. From the State Department, you will have Marco Rubio give a speech, and Marco Rubio is also not one for inflammatory language. And so there are much more responsible and even-tempered conversations going on between the transatlantic allies that are a counterpoint to the highly emotional rhetoric from last year's MSC and from the national security strategy. But all of this is pointing in a direction and working towards greater European defense maturity, a greater European geopolitical role, and tension or navigating the challenges over different policy outlooks on challenging issues like artificial intelligence or tariffs.
I think it's interesting seeing you've highlighted the presence of Elbridge Colby, a high-ranking official at the Pentagon, as you say, or the Department of War, as we should now call it. He's also a China hawk. He's the kind of guy that would think Europe's kind of old news. Our focus needs to be the Indo-Pacific and the rise of China. We've heard U.S. administrations talk for years about Asia pivots, and yet U.S. administrations keep on getting bogged down in Europe with the Ukraine war, the Middle East, with the Gaza war. But are we now seeing that shift from the Atlantic to the Indo-Pacific?
Partially. So Elbridge Colby has been unilaterally focused on the threat in the Indo-Pacific throughout his career. This has been his overarching priority. But even in this incredibly important number three position in the Pentagon, he can't turn America's attention entirely to the Indo-Pacific, because the first priority is the Western Hemisphere. It is Latin America, Greenland, America's southern border, and only then comes the question of the Indo-Pacific. So even he can't entirely steer the ship in a different direction. He's in Europe this week, first in Brussels to represent the Secretary of War in a defense ministerial for NATO, and now in Munich to explain what the national defense strategy really means. What of American resources are going to stay on the European continent and what can be moved elsewhere? And the extended nuclear deterrent is something he has emphasized in both of these venues, the importance of that for Europeans, and a conventional force on the ground that seems to be, he is indicating will remain where there is resolve to fight. We don't know exactly the details, but it could be that the more vulnerable locations actually do keep their American presence in place. Hmm. And those are the kind of details that need to be negotiated.
We are watching history unfold in real time. Christine Bezina, a senior fellow at the German Marshall Fund. Thanks so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Thank you so much.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.